This is Going Public. I'm Dean Woods. Today we're talking with Southeast Provost Mike Goddard. Dr. Goddard will update us on happenings in academic affairs. We'll also talk about the new professional piloting program, recent cyber defense success, the plan for pre-pandemic guidelines for classes in the fall semester, and more. I spoke with him on the television program Focus on Southeast.
Dr. Goddard, Mike, good to see you.
Good to see you as well. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about some of the happenings. We spoke several months ago. I know a lot has happened since then. What's happening right now in academic affairs?
I'd love to say it's been quiet, but it certainly hasn't been quiet for a lot of reasons. Yeah. You know, just like everyone else across our community, but certainly at the university, we've been very busy adapting as we move along, very fluid in nature. I'll just start by saying I've been incredibly proud of our students, our faculty, just in terms of their approach to things and a lot of the unknowns. I think our students have done just a great job maintaining the Protect the Nest guidelines to ensure that we keep our campus safe and that we could have some sort of normalcy as we had some in-person classes, certainly in the fall and this spring. I would say our biggest thing that we're optimistically looking forward to is we made the announcement just a few weeks ago that going into fall 2021, we intend to go back to our pre-pandemic classroom capacities. So we've done a lot of mixed formats over the past couple of semesters, and now we're looking forward as we move into the fall to go back to that normal in-person experience that I know a lot of our students miss. And even though we've done our best to kind of accommodate and make sure that we have some of that, going back to more of what we're used to pre-pandemic, I know I'm personally looking forward to it. I know a lot of our faculty are looking forward to it, and certainly our students.
Let's talk about the return to the pre-pandemic normalcy. How did you come to that decision? And I know you probably pored over a lot of data and recommendations. How did that all happen?
Yeah, and certainly not made in isolation. We've been fortunate. The Emergency Operations Center and the emergency response team that is underneath the Emergency Operations Center, as you're probably aware, that's been in effect for well over a year now. I'm just one member of that team. Certainly, President Vargas participates every week with those meetings that we have. And we're very fortunate to have very robust communications and interactions with our local public health experts. And so in conjunction with looking to see what is the crystal ball tell us with some of the public health experts, certainly recommendations, and our local public health experts, specifically Jane Wiseman and Dr. Russell, who have come to these meetings periodically to give updates and answer questions, taking all that into consideration. And then ultimately, Dr. Vargas made the decision that that would be the best approach for us moving forward, again, taking that optimistic outlook.
Yeah, and I guess as you've noted, it is a plan, so things can always change, right?
Yeah, and that's one thing I stated in the email that I sent out to all of our faculty and to our students is that this is our plan. However, we will make adaptations and potentially revert back to what we're doing right now if warranted. And if that's what kind of we're hearing from CDC, public health experts, and the like.
What was the response from faculty, staff, students when that email sent out, when you made that announcement?
Well, it's one of those, you never know when you send out a big email like that what the response is going to be. But I would say, in general, very positive. I think a lot of people are looking for ways in which we can get back to what we were before. Yeah. Now, I'll say this. Through a pandemic like this, we've had to make a lot of changes on the academic affairs side, just like others have had to make changes. We've learned a lot of things. And there are some things that we've learned that we want to keep doing that perhaps we haven't done in the past. And then there's other things we would prefer perhaps to never do again. But I will say, by and large, very positive, because our faculty miss our students and that normal daily interaction. And I think most days our students miss our faculty as well in those normal daily interactions. And so we want to be able to get back to that.
So let's dig a little deeper. What are some of the things that we've learned that this has to stay?
Yeah, I mean, some of our flexible learning that we were able to implement really in a very short period of time have been helpful. I'll give you one example. We had intentions before the pandemic hit to do a pilot of this HyFlex. And HyFlex is, some have probably heard it and maybe not, that's okay as well. HyFlex is a flexible way to deliver instruction where students really get to choose week to week on how they want to get that delivered. So it can be, I'm going to be face-to-face in the classroom, or it could be, I'm going to be asynchronous online, which would be a traditional online course where you don't have to log in at a certain time of the day and certain day of the week, or synchronously online. So there's really three ways that you can engage, and you can ebb and flow out of those. Now, that's a lot of work for our faculty, and it can be overwhelming. So we were intending on maybe rolling that out for about a dozen courses. And that was going to happen, that would have been this coming fall. So we were planning it last spring, and we were going to launch it in the fall of 2020. Well, we went from about a dozen to about 90 to 95 of those HyFlex courses. And it was voluntary. We never forced a faculty member into it because we know it's not a one-size-fits-all. And we learned a lot through that. This semester, we have closer to around 55 instead of 95 because what we've learned is there are some things that work really well with three different ways to engaging in that instruction, and there's some things that don't. So it doesn't lend itself to every class and every circumstance and every program, but that's something that we want to continue to look at keeping in the future and being able to have that as an opportunity for our students. And then the other thing I think that we learned is that ways in which we make sure that our classrooms are safe under any circumstances. You know, we always have a flu season. We always have things in which we have handling of equipment. We have all those things. You know, we put a lot of kind of precautions in place in terms of classroom cleaning protocols that our facilities management team did a great job with. You know, you can get hand sanitizers. You walk into any building now, not just on campus, but just about anywhere now. I think all those things are things that we learn from, and we want to be able to kind of continue. And then, you know, we use a lot of this stuff.
Even
now, right, you now, and I have some paper here in front of us. But when we went into a telework period last spring, and even when we came back and we didn't want as much handling, I think our efficiencies on how we do things and even how our students interact with their faculty, you know, instead of handing in a paper, is there an easier way for us to do an electronic submission of that? So I think a lot of those things we've tried to get better at and learn from, and things that we likely want to continue doing.
So what didn't work, or what is something that you found out, well, that we tried it, that just didn't work out like we thought?
You know, and some of it was by necessity, and I will say that we've learned from it, is we incorporated a fair amount of mixed format classes. And students probably know this, and certainly faculty know this, but to the layperson, they perhaps don't. So to make sure that we still had social distancing in our classrooms for those that were going to meet face-to-face, we would have it, let's say if you had a Tuesday, Thursday class that met, you know, at 8 o'clock in the morning, half the class might go on Tuesday face-to-face. The other half goes on Thursday face-to-face. And on your off day from face-to-face, either you log in via Zoom, you know, a synchronous connection, or maybe there's an asynchronous component to it. Well, you can imagine if a student has five classes that they're taking, and the schedules are all over the place in terms of when do I need to be there in person, when am I supposed to be there online, and do I have to be there live online, or is it just asynchronous that I need to be there, and what's the interaction that's happening? I think we prefer not to do that moving into the future if we don't need to, but certainly it served a purpose at the time, and it was a bit more of necessity. So going back to the pre-pandemic capacities in our classrooms will allow for us to, in essence, stop doing some of the mixed format. We're still going to have 100% online courses. We are still going to have HyFlex courses, certainly our face-to-face courses. We've always had what we consider hybrid courses, where some of it might be online and some of it is face-to-face. But it's very clearly articulated on the front end exactly when those dates are. We'll continue some of those, but the mixed format, probably not.
Maybe not so much.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about some of the programs specifically, and the one that's a real exciting one is this new piloting program.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this is a standalone Bachelor's of Science degree in, it's called Professional Pilot.
Right.
And what it's really doing is preparing students to go into the airline industry as a commercial pilot. Mm-hmm. And it's an incredibly exciting opportunity. This was a vision of Dr. Vargas's soon after he arrived here at Southeast. Mm-hmm. When I got here in July of 2019, it was one of the first things that he and I discussed.
Wow.
That he really wanted to see it happen. Fortunately, I came from an institution that we had a professional pilot program. And so I had some familiarity with it. And certainly there was a lot of involvement from a number of people across campus to make this happen. Mm-hmm. Dr. Brad Deacon, who's the chair of our Department of Engineering and Technology, played a huge part in this along the way. Our dean of our College of Science, Technology, Engineering, and Mathematics, Dr. Tammy Randolph, played a large role. I mentioned Dr. Vargas, who was instrumental and the visionary person behind this. But then it took a lot of community involvement as well.
Right.
And I will say the city has been tremendous through this process. Miss Katrina Amos at the airport, mm-hmm. Has been a huge supporter of it. But then there was this thing called airplanes that we needed to be concerned with.
Yeah.
And so the partnership that we have, certainly with the city and the Cape Girardeau Regional Airport, are instrumental in anything like this happening. But then to find another partner, a third-party vendor, to really provide the aircraft and to provide the in-flight training that needs to take place as well within those aircraft was important. And so looked at some other programs across the country that use this type of model and tried to make sure that we were utilizing the good things that were working for them and then trying to figure out what's best for us here at Southeast to prepare our students to be successful. And I will say through this process, what I've learned is there are a lot of aviation enthusiasts around the mm-hmm. Cape Girardeau area and around the region as well, who were incredibly supportive of this initiative.
Okay.
This is Going Public. I'm Dan Woods. Today we're talking with Southeast Provost Mike Goddard. I spoke with him on the television program Focus on Southeast.
Well, let's talk about cyber defense. The cyber defense program has just been growing and growing and winning more awards, as I understand.
Yeah, and so I always want to plug when I can plug a little bit about what we have going on.
Yeah.
We have an undergraduate cybersecurity program, and then just over the past couple of years, we started our master's degree in cybersecurity as well.
Okay.
When we look at both of those programs combined, we have over 200 students right now in cybersecurity at Southeast Missouri State University. It is one of our fastest growing programs that we have on this campus and is quickly becoming one of our largest programs as well. At Southeast. And we think the timing is great for individuals to be able to be engaged with that. And they continue to perform very well. We just recently, our cyber defense team won their 9th consecutive state cyber defense championship. And actually, in the next week or so, I think it's actually March 19th through the 21st, is the regional competition. So there was about 20 teams at the state level. We obviously won, and we're very proud of our team for that. They're moving on to the regional competition where they'll compete with individuals within the Midwest region.
Okay.
And then the winner for that goes on to the national competition. And I have no doubt that our team will be very competitive at the regional and hopefully be able to represent us at the national competition coming up in April.
Wow. Let's talk about that program a little bit, because this, as I understand it, it has to do with protecting networks and data, which is a big thing.
It's a huge thing. We have a cyber range on our campus. It's located in Dempster Hall. If you've never been over to Dempster Hall, we encourage you to take a look at it, because when you walk into the atrium area of Dempster Hall and you just kind of look up to your left, you'll see a glassed-in cyber range that we have. And we have infrastructure in place there to ensure, and we've actually doubled the infrastructure support in that area in terms of core processing units. Mm-hmm. We've doubled it over the past year to provide even more opportunities for our students to have that experiential learning. And at any one time, there are thousands upon thousands of cyber attacks that are happening. And so what our students learn is how to prevent cyber attacks, but then when those attacks occur, how to best mediate those and make sure that they're not catastrophic for those organizations, industries, businesses. And there's a need in just about any business that you can think of. And, you know, even locally over the past year and a half or so, there's been cyber attacks on municipalities, yeah, on higher education, exactly, organizations, not us at Southeast, yeah, but others. Mm-hmm. And so it's happening all around us. And when you talk about fraud and you talk about individuals in terms of, you know, credit cards being, numbers being taken, I mean, all that feeds into the cyber defense aspects. Yeah. And we're preparing our students to be critical thinkers, problem solvers, and ways in which they can provide solutions to businesses and organizations.
What's the job growth look like in that area? I'm sure it's
through the roof. I mean, we have 100% placement of every single one of our students who graduates from our program in cybersecurity and computer science. So there are jobs out there for those individuals, and we ensure that they're well qualified to be able to be competitive for those. And we have opportunities for people to engage in that both face-to-face and online with our programs that we have in cyber. And so there's many ways that we can do this remote. For instance, the competition that our students are doing at the regional level, mm-hmm, that was supposed to be in Chicago. We were notified just a few days ago that now it's going to be a virtual event and not a face-to-face event, right, which is fine because we have a cyber range and we can do everything from our cyber range and be very competitive from a distance if we need to. And that's a lot of what the industry is anyways. You're not going to physically be necessarily, true, where that attack is, yeah, happening. It's going to be a virtual environment anyways.
Well, in the minutes we have left, I'd like to have you speak a little bit about this, the idea of offering courses, you know, after talking with area businesses and leaders, to say what skills do students need to serve this area, and how do we get that data, and what do we do along those lines?
Yeah, excellent question, Dan. And we always want to look at workforce needs and demands in our region to make sure that we're meeting, mm-hmm, the needs that are out there. And what we're doing more and more in terms of our academic programs and our services, and honestly, either credit or non-for-credit, is to look at stackable ways in which we can provide credentialing for individuals to meet that workforce need demand. Mm-hmm. And so that might be more development of certificates that we have for individuals that could lead into them going towards a bachelor's degree. Mm-hmm. We have prior learning assessment at Southeast Missouri State to look at previous experiences and how they might play into a degree as well, but also talking to our industry partners, talking to the corporations, and finding what do you need from us, mm-hmm, and then trying to provide solutions for those needs, mm-hmm, is important for us, and one in which we're going to continue to develop out.
And I know another thing that I've talked to Dr. Vargas about this on the program before is we have these graduates who have these great skills, trying to keep them in Southeast Missouri.
Yeah.
And plugging those together with the business and industry.
Right. And I think, you know, the experiential learning that we value at Southeast and the partners that we have through that process here in the local area and certainly within our region, I think that then those industry partners are able to easily see the value that our students can, mm-hmm, can provide for their organization, and perhaps it's positions that they never even thought of before. So partnering with them early and often in terms of the experiential learning opportunities, I think, goes a long way. But we want to make sure that we meet the needs of this region with our students and make sure that they understand that they have tremendous opportunity, either for entry-level positions, but then for growth throughout their career as well here, mm-hmm, in Southeast Missouri.
Got about 90 seconds. And I guess this is just having an open dialogue and talking to the chamber and talking to some of the bigger corporations. Is there ever any, and it takes time, I'm guessing. You have to have lead time to get a degree and get it approved, and right, there has to be a pipeline there to get that done.
Yeah, there is, and certainly some state requirements that as well. So typically on the short end, we're looking at 1 year, but typically it can be as long as 18 months to kind of get something through.
Yeah.
Having advisory boards within our academic areas is very important, and having industry partners as a part of that is a tremendous benefit to us and our students.
And getting out and talking with people, and you learn a lot when you just have these boards and just meet with people and ask questions, and you sometimes find out things you didn't know.
That's absolutely. And, you know, sometimes you don't know what you don't know until
That's
you
right.
ask those questions and have people provide that feedback and input. And that, again, only strengthens our programs and only strengthens the opportunities for our students.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Goddard, it's been good talking with you. We appreciate your time today.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. Yep. Thanks, Dan.
To hear more interviews, visit krcu.org.